Good afternoon, everyone. It's Adam again at Ucrafolk 24 with my 17th stop-off on my Welcome to Scotland series. I'm here today with a man who's actually got to do one of those things all kids, well, I'm not going to say all kids, but most kids dream of when they're growing up. He got to captain a team to a cup final and score a goal in the cup final for the team he was leading. Now, I'm not really in Edinburgh, but I am with Hibernian today. And I'm really fortunate to have Rob Jones with me. Afternoon, Rob. How are you doing over there?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I say, I'm really looking forward to this one today to hear a bit about your career, your experiences, the day itself, the final itself, and you know, your memories from your time at Hibernian and other things that have gone on in your career as well. So I'm looking forward to that. But before we get started, big shout out to Stell, as always, that shoot to the fence. Stell, we really appreciate all your hard work behind the scenes, and I wouldn't be able to put these pods out there without you. So thank you for that. And another mention to Squad Plus as well. It's, you know, one of the newest analytical tools out on the market for all your football intel on the Scottish League. So if you haven't had a look at those, have a jump in with them straight away. But Rob, you're the star of the show today. Now, you got started at York City, if my Wikipedia research was correct.
Yeah. An awful long time ago.
Weren't that long ago. How did it all get started there? And, you know, what are your memories from the early part of your career? What really stood out for you on your journey?
I was at Manchester United. I was at Nottingham Forest and I was at York City. Mm-hmm. And then back in that time, it was classed as schoolboy forms. So I think when I turned 12, I think it was, you then had to choose between which one you wanted to go to, and the others fell by the way. And because I'm from the northeast and York was only around the corner, it was the best fit for me. My parents didn't drive, so it took away that problem of commuting all the time for training sessions and games, which would put a big strain on not just me but my parents. So York was the way to go, and to be honest, it was with a guy called Ricky Sprazier, who has gone on to manage Sunderland and the whatnot. He was my youth team coach at the time. Brilliant. And the scary fact is that in those days, I was a centre forward. So yeah. I was quite prolific as a centre forward. So no, very different to how I eventually got into the full-time game. But no, it's one of those where you look back and it had its ups and its downs. You come away from grassroots football where you're going to play every week, and then you go into an academy situation where you're not guaranteed to play. Players need to play as many minutes as what you do. Sometimes you don't play in a position that you'd like to play. And at 15, I fell out of love with the game, to be brutally honest. Yeah. Ricky Sprazier he'd gone to Manchester United as a youth team coach. I got a new coach. I can't really remember his name, to be honest. And he kept putting me in different positions, playing me 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. And it wasn't what I was interested in. I just fell out of love with it completely. And I wrote my letter into the club and had asked to be released from my schoolboy forms. I was duly released. And then I went to play men's football at the age of 15. So I went to play pub football, as they call it.
Oh, wow.
And that was an education, a real, real education. So 15-year-old, I was obviously on the verge of doing my GCSEs. I'd come out of the game that I love and I wanted to be a footballer. And it, for me, that was more or less me saying, well, it's not really going to happen for you, because I didn't have a good time at York, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't really fit in with the local players, and the coach wanted to go in a different direction. But coming out and playing men's football was a breath of fresh air to me. It was fun. There was lots of camaraderie. Everybody was in it together. You learned an awful lot about the game itself from the older heads. Some of these players had played semi-pro and would now just enjoying the football. And no, I embraced it, and I loved every minute of it. And that's really where this Rob Jones centre forward became Rob Jones centre half.
Really?
And that's where, that's more or less where it started, to be honest. And I played alongside a guy called Jed Hartley, who's local to this area, and a guy called Peter Burton. And those two taught me probably everything I know about being a centre half. And it just snowballed from there, to be honest. I then went back into semi-pro. And then from my semi-pro, I went into the pro game. And I think it was from that early nurturing and understanding of what men's football is all about and what is needed and what is required to be fruitious in it is what stood me in good stead for the future and the career that I had.
Now, I'm just going to dive in there because with some of the other people I've spoken to over the last couple of months, kind of had this debate. So you're firmly in the camp, I would imagine, of getting that senior experience as early as possible against being nurtured in the academy system. Is that right?
I think, to be honest, I think there needs to be a blend. I do. Mm-hmm. I think if a player is not ready to go into the first team environment at the age of 19, 20, 21, when is he going to be ready to go in that environment? Yes, the academy status and the training pitches and the access to the coaches and the analysis and psychology and all that sort of stuff is vitally important. But I do think you should be playing men's football. I do. Hmm. I think there's the argument at the moment about in England about the under-23 football and trying to bring back the reserve system. I don't think the reserve system will come back. I think the 23s is here to stay. But I do think the 23s needs to be more cutthroat and first team environment characteristics. I've watched many 23s games where you keep the ball, we keep the ball, you keep it, we keep it, and there's not really any of that physicality in there. I think that needs to be brought back to a point in a stage. I read an article a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, it might be in Brighton, who have signed a 36-year-old just to play in the 23s because he can. And he's been there and he's done it and he's organised and he's a good pro. And then the younger kids can learn off him. And I think that's a brilliant thing. This is something that I did when I was in charge of Doncaster 23s. I'd play every now and again alongside one of the young kids, talk him through the game, come away. And that's just invaluable. I think now the big argument is these young boys are given far too much too early. But that's the way the times are going, unfortunately. Jurgen Klopp probably has it the best way where they're all on the same amount of money each year, no matter whether you're the goalkeeper or centre forward, you're all on the same money and it's incentivised. And that's why so many young kids from Liverpool are coming through now and pushing into the first team because they want to get into that environment and they want to stay in that environment. But we could sit here and talk about the 23s all day long. I think players, when it's right, should be out playing mm-hmm. men's football. But
yeah.
The men's football that these players need to be playing has to have a balance between where they're going to go back to. There's mm-hmm. no point a centre midfielder going out to a low league team who just smash it as far as I can and miss the midfield out when their club plays fast attractive football when they play through the thirds, because it doesn't gain anything from it. So there has to be that marrying system of a nurture, yes, an eye opening, yes, but it has to correlate to how the team of the owners of the player, how they play. So it's got to be like that.
Thanks for that. It's just, it's one of those where I'm just curious now about the different views, the perspectives on this issue, because I was talking to a player recently who didn't go out on loan and didn't get that experience and career kind of stagnated a little bit because he wasn't getting the game time, shall we say. So, I was curious about that at all. Then,
you can get lost in that environment and it can become a Monday to Friday job, if you like, because you know you're not going to play on the weekend. You just train Monday to Friday. And then it becomes the norm. And sometimes it's very difficult to get out of that norm and back into that physical side of it. So I understand where he's coming from there. But again, it's his career and he has to lead it. No one else can lead it for him.
Exactly, exactly. As I say, once you got the chance in the pro game, obviously, how did you get from there to Scotland? And, you know, what was it like when you first heard of Hibs' sort of interest?
Well, it was a strange path. I left Gateshead, which is semi-pro at the time. I was bought by Stockport County, went to play for Stockport County. Started really well. And then I think the fact that training every day and games on a weekend and Tuesday nights and Thursday nights, I think that caught up with me at some point because my body was just not ready for it. So I started really well, then faded away a little bit. New manager came in, didn't really fancy me, told me to go play at this club and that club. And that's when I was probably a bit stubborn, to be honest, and said, no, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. This is where I want to go. And thankfully, that stubbornness has paved the way to what I did after that. I ended up going to Grimsby with Russell Slade. First year, absolute nightmare. I started the first three games, got injured, had an operation, struggled right the way through until probably the final seven games of the season. Managed to get myself another year on the back of that. In which time, I think my body and everything was now became in tune with the professional demands and the professional environment. The following season, we got beaten in the playoff final to go into League One. I got player of the season for every supporters club and all that sort of stuff. So I had a great year. Then I was sold. I was sold to Hibs.
Okay.
Hibs was played. He then went onto Mimes Yeovil. So he left. And then Tony Mowbray had put an offer in for me to go to Hibs. And away I went.
So what were your feelings at the time about moving up there? Was it, I would imagine Hibs is, you know, quite a club of good stature and everything in the Scottish game. It must have been quite a bit of excitement with that.
Yeah, we all know about Scottish football and the players that were up there at that time, the players that had been up there before that. It was an exciting time for me as an individual. Something to really get your teeth into in an environment where you're playing in front of 15 to 20, 30,000 plus each week, which was great, playing the big stadiums, playing against the Rangers and the Celtics every so often, which is also enticing. You're playing the Hibs Hearts derby, the big Edinburgh derby, which is magnificent. But the only problem I had is myself and my wife, Ethan, was 6 weeks old when we moved. So, so it was difficult. So I alluded to the playoff final. So I had 10 days. Normally, pre-season, 7.5, 8 weeks. I had 10 days to get myself from Grimsby, where we were living, and then up to Scotland. And then we went straight into European football. So it was quite a whirlwind first 3 or 4 weeks, to be honest.
Apologies, Rob. Got to ask this question before we move on. It's one of these when the penny drops. I'm from Tamworth originally. Were you at Stockport with Ashley Williams?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Small world.
Yeah, he came in late on because I think they're signing from Hensford.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he came in, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks before I left, or maybe just after I left. I'm not sure. It was himself. Dave Challoner was there. A boy called Rob Clare was there. I think Ash came in, might have been just before I left. And I moved on to, obviously on to Grimsby.
I only ask because actually my younger brother used to play junior football with him. So we followed his career all the way up to Swansea and all the success he had later on with them and then at Everton.
No, he's extremely well. Yeah, extremely well.
Really does. Anyway, back to Hibs. Like you said, that you had the 10 days to get up there. Surely, how did the club help you with that? How did they support you with the move?
Oh, they were brilliant. A lady called Sheila Kinghorn was put in real. Whenever I got a question or I needed something, that was the point of call for me. It was great. I'd obviously signed. I'd come back down, gone back home to collect some stuff, pick the the wife and Ethan up, and then we travelled back. And then the day we travelled back, Sheila had arranged 4 or 5 different viewings on properties and whatnot, which was great. She took us everywhere we needed to go, showed us what we needed to do, where we had to be. So that was all sorted. The following day, I'd been training, so she ran to make sure that I knew where I was going, knew what time I needed to be there, what I needed to address, and all that sort of stuff. So, the club were fantastic. And I think that was probably the first time I come across a so-called liaison officer who helped you over that initial hurdle of a new country, new city, haven't got a clue where anything is, don't know where to go, don't know what to be here for and whatnot. And she was brilliant. And she was great with Laura and Ethan, because it's obviously it was more difficult for them two than it was for me.
Yeah, it's great to see. From where I sit anyway, I see it now. It's one of the things where the games, you know, the clubs especially are moving forward. They support players and the like. So it's great to hear. I mean, this was 2007, if I'm right.
2006 it was.
Six. So it's great to see here that they were taking care of things back then. What's it like today when it comes to sort of liaisons and things? How has it changed in your opinion?
I think now the clubs are really, really on top of it, to be honest. Although you see now there's an awful lot of foreign imports that come across and really don't know the language, don't know the area, don't know anybody. And you ask any footballer, if the wife and children are happy, then the footballer's happy. The end all. So if as a football club you can do whatever you need to do to make sure that everything runs as smoothly as it possibly can, there's always an answer at the end of the telephone, then it makes life so much easier for the player, because at the end of the day, if a player's happy, he's given you everything he's got on a weekend or a midweek game, whatever it is, and that's what you bought him for in the first place. So if you can add to that reluctance, if you like, and nurture and organise things for the individual, and it benefits the football club as a whole. I think sometimes I've seen it in the past where the player signs and that's it. Nothing ever else is discussed and they're just left to their own devices. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they start in the wrong area and they get with the wrong people and all that sort of stuff. So it seems to snowball. But I think football clubs, especially at the top level now where there's so much money involved, they all have their own full-time liaison officers, and it's something that obviously had started, we're doing in 2006. I know we're 15 years down the line from there, but I think there's more clubs now addressing that situation and making the transition from whether you're foreign or you're English or you're Scottish or Welsh or Irish. It doesn't make any difference. The opportunity to make people comfortable at a quicker stage is beneficial for all.
I agree completely with you on that. Regarding the club itself, just one thing for people who don't know Edinburgh, shall we say, where exactly is the club located? You know, where's within the city? You know, the ground, and what's its relationship to the training complex there?
Well, basically, Edinburgh, right in the middle of Edinburgh, is obviously Princess Street and the Edinburgh Waverley Stadium. Mm-hmm. And I would say that Hearts Ground and Hibs Ground is exactly the same distance from that station. Hibs is Leith based, so obviously the Sunshine and Leith song with the Proclaimers. So that's Leith based. Hearts is out the way in Gorgie sort of area. But Hibs is more towards the shore.
Okay. So,
it's you can see it from the top of Princess Street, so it's very you can see it, but they're sporadic at two different ends. Mm-hmm. It's more or less cut in the middle by the train station.
Is that a good thing then, that it's the opposite ends of the city? What was the relationship like with Hearts? Is it quite a fearsome rivalry or a more friendly one?
No, it's horrible.
Really? Hi, Brad. Just give us a picture of it. Go on.
No, there's a pure hatred.
Really?
Wow. I'm sure you will have seen in recent years when they were throwing pound coins at Neil Lennon on the touchline.
Of course, yeah.
In the face. it's horrible, and they don't like each other. It's as simple as that, and that's putting it nicely. There's lots of obscenities in the game. There's lots of things thrown. There's lots of things said and done, and all that sort of stuff. But for me as a player, it just adds to that excitement of the game, to be honest. And if you can't build yourself up for a game like that, you're in the wrong game altogether.
I can, agree with you on that one, Nick. Definitely. I mean, it didn't spill into your private life at all while you were up there or anything like that. It was just purely based on the pitch.
No, we bought a house out in Midlothian, and it's a little bit Hearts country.
Okay. Did you know that at the time?
It was a bit of a mixture, to be honest. So it was a bit of potluck, but no, it was great. We had a few Hearts fans in the area. We had a few Hibs fans in the area, and to be honest, it was a lovely, nice estate, and people got along really well. There was a bit of banter when they come up to the derby days, but it never spilled over to anything more than that. And to be fair, even on when I'm out, I was out in town with my wife or friends, and we're in a bar or a restaurant. It was never really anything more than just the light banter. It was never anything that shouldn't have been done or shouldn't have been said.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to ask Hearts guys this when I finally get around to interviewing Hearts as well. Is Edinburgh a Hearts or a Hibs city?
I'd say it's green.
It's green. Edinburgh is green. That's good to know. That's good to know. I have to ask, definitely. Right. Moving on. Obviously, you'd moved up there from England. What was the relationship like with the players, the Scottish players? Was there a bit of friendly banter there or anything? And how did the training sessions, the organisation, the attitude of the players, did you notice any difference to the clubs you've been at in England?
No, the dressing room was fantastic. It had a mix and a blend of old and youth, and I sat firmly in the middle of that. It was good. It was good banter. The young Scottish boys coming through. There were some older Scottish boys. There were some English boys in there. There was a couple of French boys in there. There was a Moroccan in there. So there was quite a mixture and a blend. But no, we all got on really, really well. I think for me, it was good that I'd only just finished the season before, because I'd hit the ground running and I was still fit and I was still match fit and whatnot. But no, it seemed like a very seamless transition from being in Grimsby then to Hibs. Training-wise, at that point, the training ground hadn't been built, so we were using different places. So it was the same. So we'd meet the training at the ground, get changed at the ground, then travel to where we were destined to travel. And the same thing was at Grimsby. So really was a seamless transition. It was not something I wasn't used to. It wasn't until, I think, 18 months later, we went to the training ground, which changed everything, to be brutally honest, because you then have a bit more of a home. And the ground itself becomes sacred, and you only go into the ground when it comes match days, which gives you a different buzz. I think sometimes when you've been there week in, week out, that buzz of the match day, it takes the edge off it, where you know this is the business end of the week, and this is why we're at the stadium.
You said, am I right? I heard you right there. You came in and it was banged with a European campaign as well, yeah?
Yes, we got into Europe the back end of the season before. So it was called the Intertoto and Out Cup.
Then. Oh, the old Intertoto. Oh, great.
So there was prelims in that. So I think I played five, six games in that.
Oh, so, where did you go? Where did you go?
We played Odense.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
So that was entertaining. There and back. We played, over in Sweden, one game on an Astro pitch. I can't remember the last one. It'll come back to me eventually. it was all new. I had not played in Europe before. I had not played in the European side, not even in friendlies. And it was all new to me. But what I would say, it was extremely professional. The outfit, the bus to the airport, the flight over, picked up where you need to be, dropped off the hotel. Everything was catered for, everything was done. All you had to do was make sure that you brought your boots and you played properly. And it was terrific. And it was nice to be exposed to that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also helped with me being accepted in the dressing room very quickly, because we were into games straight away. And like I said before, that first year couldn't have really gone any better for me.
Oh, definitely. Did you notice, I mean, obviously going to Denmark, Sweden, what was the change in the sort of styles of play? Did you change sort of drops, shall we say, the British style of football to play them? Or what was your sort of memories of the way they played football over there?
Well, we were a total footballing side. Tony wanted to play football. He wanted his defenders to defend, but he wanted his teams to play football. And we had young Scott Brown in the middle of the pitch. We had Stephen Fletcher at the top of the pitch. So that helps.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that the biggest eye-opener coming from League Two was the lack of physicality in European football. So you have to learn very quickly, because the slightest little touch, they'll roll over and scream and whinge and moan, and you give them free kick after free kick after free kick, and it's really, in this country, it's never been a free kick. It's just the European way, unfortunately. So you have to learn very quickly about not getting too close, not getting too tight too early. But we overcame that very, very quickly.
It's like a nice little icing on the cake, isn't it? Getting to have that European experience as well. We touched on Hearts earlier there. What was the relationship like with the Glasgow clubs, Celtic and Rangers? I don't know. Did you guys refer to them as what a lot of the fans seem to refer to Celtic and Rangers around the leagues? I've been hearing on various conversations.
No, I think the Rangers-Celtic games were always built up with a bit more hype. And I think that was the way it always always has been. I think it was a little bit of Celtic Rangers versus the rest, to be honest. Because people would say, well, it's only going to be the only two teams that are going to win the league are Celtic and Rangers, and everybody else becomes a slow second. But for us, it was great occasions to go and play at Ibrox and Celtic Park. Fantastic occasions. But for footballers, it's a strange one, because you just have to make it just another game. And you're in the same league as them for a reason. You're a good side yourselves. You've won games. You've been profitable. You've sustained a level of football for a sustainable amount of time. So you have to go into the game as any other league game, as if you're going to play the teams that are going to be fit in and around you. And no, don't get me wrong, everybody wants to beat Rangers and Celtic. They do. But Means the Kilmarnocks, the Falkirks in the division. So for me, it was just, I think maybe other players took it differently, but for me, it was just another game in a different environment, in a different atmosphere.
All right. So let's touch on the captaincy for a bit now. Were you the captain when you were you brought up there to be captain, to lead the changing room, or did you transition into the role?
No, I was brought up to replace Gary Caldwell, who left and gone to Celtic. And obviously, Gary Caldwell was centre-half and the captain of the football club. I think he signed a pre-contract with Celtic, so he moved on. I think he left the week before I arrived. But the captaincy side of it was never discussed with Tony. Never discussed. I found out later on by John Hollins. Not John Hollins. It'll come back to me. But I found out later on that if I'd arrived 6 months earlier, I'd have been made captain in the summer that I arrived. But because I was only new and I'd only just stepped foot in the place, it wasn't a possibility. But I've captained every club I've played for. So it's not a new thing to me. It wasn't something that I demanded it was something that eventually was given to me.
What was when you became the captain? Did the relationship with the players change at all? And what was the new dynamic then?
No, I think you made captain because of the mannerisms before you were captain in the first place. So the way you behave around other people, the way people behave around you, the way you carry yourself, your manners, obviously the way you play the game on the pitch, the way you transfer the manager's thoughts and feelings onto the pitch and in and around others. I think that's what gives you the opportunity to wear that armband. So it was not something that I had to change anything drastically overnight because the armband was then passed to me, because I'd been doing it all along. It's just the way that I am, the way that my mannerisms are. And I go, for me, I go for a life where there's two different kinds of people. There's the leaders and the followers, and I ain't a follower, regardless of what I do or where I go, who I speak to. I am not a follower. I do things when I want to, how I want to, and at my own speed and at my own pace.
Good man, good man. Now we've got to talk about the cup run and the final. What were your favourite memories from the run? If there are any games that stood out on the run to the final, and then what were your favourite memories from the day? Obviously, I assume the goal and the trophy will be part of this.
The quarter final will be something that sticks out for a long time to come. We played Hearts at Easter Road. We won 1-0 and I scored the goal. So that's a nice way to endear yourself to the home fans. That will stand out. Obviously, semi-final, it took us to extra time, and obviously we got the goal late on. And again, then we played at Hearts as the home team, which was a bit strange and a bit surreal when we played St. Johnstone. But then the cup final itself, it was glittered with memories that will last for a lifetime. You wake up and it's snowing, and not just snowing, it's snowing a blizzard, and you're thinking, is this game on? Is it going to be off? We walk around the golf course where it's just white everywhere. I think the fact that you're going to play at Hampden in front of 52,000 people, I'd only been there, 8 months? And you're going to lead your side out to a possible cup-winning feat after not winning any trophy for 16 years. So I think the pressure was there a little bit for us as a group, because I think going into it, we were favourites. But scoring the goal was beyond my wildest dreams. The way we played that day was, I think, beyond anybody's wildest dreams, to be honest. And the fact that you go up and lift the trophy is a vision and a picture that will never be erased. But I think one of the biggest things is you go onto the pitch after the game, and we linked arms as players and as a squad and as a group, and we listened to 32,000 people sing Sunshine on Leith, which is just incredible.
Oh, God. You're a lucky man. You're a lucky man, Rob, to have memories like that, mate.
Special times. And those thoughts now, you see, I still got goosebumps now.
Yeah.
Such a long time ago. But no, it was a special occasion for, not for me, but for the supporters of the football club, the players along me, the family, the friends. Because that group of players, regardless of what happens in the future, will go down in history of winning the cup for Hibs in this prestigious game in such a strange environment at Hampden, where it snowed for most of it. So, no, it was just you grew up, as you said, wanting to play in cup finals, wanting to score the winner, doing this, doing that, playing for your hometown club, and all this sort of stuff. So, I can rest very easily in my retirement, because I've ticked off a lot more boxes than most of the people.
You certainly have. I bet. Am I right in thinking you probably don't have to pay for many drinks afterwards in Edinburgh? And meal, there are a few meals thrown in as well, as long as you're in the right part of the city.
No, we let's just say they looked after us.
Well, that's good to hear. So you must have very fond memories of the Hibs fans. Quite a passionate bunch.
Fantastic, yeah. Took to me really well. A club that I think, as a whole, if you see a player who's got a passion and a big heart and desire and a ruthlessness to go and do the best he can for your football club, then you do warm to him. And I was never the best footballer in the world, and I'll hold my hands up. But what I did, I did everything I possibly could to try and win that game. I did everything I possibly could to try and influence those around us to go to be fruitious at what we did. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, those attributes got me to where they got me to. But no, I think I've had a rapport with the vast majority of supporters of football clubs that I played for. But no, I think if you see someone with the same passion and the same determination as you, you do warm to them and you do adjust to them. But no, that's where the infamous Spandau Ballet song started. And it followed me for everywhere I've been since then.
Go on then, you've got to tell us a bit more about that.
No, it was a home game. And I think it was Saturday afternoon home game. And it's a strange one because when I'm playing, what's going on around is a little bit like white noise.
Yeah.
So I don't really take in what people are saying and what the chants are and all sorts. I'm just totally engrossed in the game itself. And it wasn't until after the game there was noises and whatnot and a few different noises, but I wasn't really taking that much notice. And it was a kit man, Tan. He pulled me after the game and he said, when did they make that song? And I was like, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about, Tan. I said, I haven't got a clue. He said, no, they've been singing your song for 90 minutes. And to be fair, we went into his office and he put it on. And yeah, it was quite surreal. It was quite surreal. Very funny at the time. It's something that I've been back up since, and I've been to games and I've watched games, and they've turned around, they've spotted me, and then the whole place has erupted in the same song. So that's very, very, very humbling as an individual to have others show that much appreciation towards you.
Really, yeah. I mean, it's probably the most strong. I don't know what the word is there. I'm lost for adjectives. But the strongest statement that fans could make when they adopt a song for one of their own. And yeah, so all credit to you indeed. Now I hope you'll indulge me a little bit, Rob, before we move on, because I do this with everyone I talk to. Two things I'd like to do with you. First up, favorite places you'd recommend near Easter Road to go to grab a beer or maybe a bite to eat before a game for people who we hope get to travel soon after lockdown.
Le Monde is always a good one.
Le Monde.
Le Monde.
Le Monde.
That was owned. It was owned by a big Hibs fan who's now moved, sold it and moved to a different place. But Le Monde was always a haunt for me on my day off to go and have lunch with Laura and the kids. Lovely place, very swanky. So that was always nice. The one on the corner of Easter Road, can't remember what it's called now, but there's one on the corner which always is full of Hibs fans. And down by the shore, there's the kitchen down by the shore, which is a big Michelin star restaurant. I've eaten there a few times, and it's beautiful. So there's lots. It depends on what you want. If you want a cheap pie, just get yourself down to Easter Road. If you want to have a sit-down meal, you're going to have to go a little bit further afield. But I'm sure since I was last there, well, I was last there but a few months ago. Mm-hmm. But last time I lived there, they were getting thrown up all over the place. So, no, I'm sure it's changed a little bit since I've had a night out there. But there's some lovely restaurants, some very nice pubs, and some very buoyant pubs, as I might say.
I like that word, indeed. And the other thing I have to ask you is, obviously, when the fixture lists come out, we mentioned briefly there Celtic Park, Ibrox, Hampden. Were there any others that you were really excited to, or you've got very fond memories of playing at around the league?
For me, it was just the derbies.
The derbies.
The derbies came before Celtic and Rangers for me. I just loved playing in that environment and that atmosphere, and everything on a knife edge. And it was my kind of game, really, because it was two teams who just wanted to beat each other up for 90 minutes, and that was it. And me being me, the bald-headed, broken noses, 6'7", you wanted to fight, and you wanted to fight. I'm quite happy to have a fight. It doesn't shirk me on a little bit. So, no, for me, yes, you look at the fixture list, but you get to know the derbies much earlier than anything else, and all the talk is about the derbies. Because it used to be, when I was there, it used to always be a derby day on Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. It's changed now, but it was always a Boxing Day derby. So it was always at the forefront of my mind when the fixtures come out, that, yes, these games, because I just love playing.
Ah, that's good to hear. So you were there for, is it 2-3 years?
What, 3 years.
Yeah. What triggered the move back south?
I came back because I wanted to go and play in the Championship. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have an opportunity to try and see if I could go and play in the Premier League or not. That didn't come to fruition, unfortunately, but that's football, it's the way it is. But no, a couple of offers had came from the Championship in January, and that didn't work. It didn't work out from the club's point of view. And I'd heard my grievances about the fact that I'd like to go and have a, because I was in my last year, I'd like to go and have a look at the opportunity to go and play in the Championship. And then it came about. Started okay. It went all right. Then it fell a bit sour, to be honest. From there, I went on to Sheffield Wednesday, which is my boyhood team. So for me, it's another surreal occasion, a surreal environment to go into. I went there initially on loan, then they signed me permanently, then I became the captain in the summer. Then we got promoted in that year to the Championship. And no, Hibs will always be a massive part of my life, massive. Mm-hmm. And Hibs and Scottish football is what put my name back on the map as a footballer. And I would ever forever be indebted to that. But after 3 years, I wanted the opportunity to go and play and pit myself against some of the best players in England. And with the opportunity to try and get back into that, go into the Premier League. But that wasn't to be. For me, I go through my life, don't answer your own questions. So my question was, am I good enough to go and play in a Championship? Am I good enough to go and play in the Premier League? I was never good enough playing in the Premier League, but I was good enough to go and play in a Championship, and I had to show that. And over the course of 4 years down there, I did show that to an extent. And I look back now and people say, well, was it the right decision? It was the right decision at that right time for me and for my family and my footballing career, because in hindsight, I would never have got to play for Sheffield Wednesday. And Sheffield Wednesday is closer to my heart than any other.
Mm-hmm. And then you had a nice, what was it, 4 years at Donny Rovers after that as well?
Three and a half years. So the summer after we got promoted to the Championship, the manager wanted to change more or less all the personnel that was in at that time.
Mm. Yeah.
I then got the choice to either sit and train Monday to Friday, have the weekends off for the full year until my contract ran out, or go and find first team football. And there's no deliberation. I wanted to play for every, I was one of those footballers out there where for every Saturday you didn't play was a Saturday you'll never ever get back.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's not about the money, it was about playing football. And that's what all I've ever wanted to do. So I got an opportunity to go and play for Doncaster with Dean Saunders, which was fantastic. What a character. What a character, what a guy. And I went over there and again, the song followed me. The armband followed me. the prestige of being a bit of a leader and someone who drives people on followed me. And first season, again, couldn't have gone any better. Obviously, Dean left in the December to go over at Wolves. But then I became the player manager, as you like, and we managed to win the league in the last day of the season, last kick of the season, again, away at Brentford to get promoted to the championship again. So, no, my career's had its ups and its downs and its meanders and whatnot, but no, it's been, when you come on shows like this and you get to talk about it, you do reflect on how well it went, really.
Yeah, definitely. As I got strong memories of that time as well, as a football fan, shall we say. I'll let you know later who my team is, but it's a team close to Sheffield Wednesday and Donny Rovers as well. But we were all involved at those times, so it was a great time. And so, what are you up to these days? Anyway, now moving forward,
I'm just coaching at the moment. I'm coaching in the academy at Middlesbrough, some of the younger ones, which is nice. I enjoy it, but I just like the opportunity to influence others and give them the chance that I had. So I've got a wealth of experience, a wealth of knowledge, ups and downs, what went wrong, what didn't go wrong, what was great, what wasn't so great. And if I have the opportunity to influence one individual who can go on to fulfill his dream, then I'm delighted with that. It's something that's now my passion. Obviously, playing's gone now, it's finished. Coaching's my passion, and I come to life when I step onto the pitch now. Mm-hmm. And it's nice now that I'm now in control of groups and help to nurture those groups and move them forward and give them that platform.
Ah, that's good to hear. How do you feel we've probably covered about sort of 20 years on and off there during this chat. How do you feel the game's changed, especially now you're working with youngsters from when you were a youngster at York to where we are now? Just so people can get a real feel for how it's changed.
No, I think it's changed in the same fact that society has changed.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I use myself and my two children as an example, when I was a kid growing up, I had to fight for everything I wanted and everything I got, and it was never given to me. So I think the mentality's changed a little bit. I think it's a bit more wayward now. It's a bit more slack now than it was when I was a child. I think children now accept a little bit more. I think children now are given a little bit more than they should be given at an early age. I think now we're in an environment where the child asks for something and the parent says yes, because the parent's frightened to say no. I think we live in a more affluent environment now, so there's more opportunity to say yes than there was many, many years ago. I just think that now we need to create more resilience in our younger players. And the fact that someone says no to them is not gospel. The fact that someone says no to them should be that driving force to make them say, and as I tell you what, I want to show you that you're wrong. I want to change your mind. I'm going to change everybody else's mind. I think where now we're just sometimes when someone says no, we just accept and go on to do something different. I'll use myself as an example. I was told no a few times when I was younger. You're not going to be a footballer, you're not going to be a footballer. But then I turn around now and I look at those same individuals and say, well, you were wrong, weren't you? And not show malice to them, but show them that they were the driving force of me going, you know what, I'm going to show you wrong. I'm going to prove to you that I can do this. And I think now the mentality of younger players now is very different to what it was when I was arriving. And you look at now, you've got 17, 18, 19-year-olds driving around in big Mercedes Benzes and Audis. And I think sometimes it becomes more about playing the role of the footballer rather than the footballer.
Mm-hmm.
So you sign that contract, which is worth whatever it's worth. Right now, I need a nice car. I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to wear this and that. Get a nice watch. I need to do this. Where for me, it's much more than that. Remember why you came into it in the first place. You came into it in the first place to play first team football, to win trophies, to win medals, to play in the environments that you dreamed of when you were a kid. And those other things will come along at some point. Don't go and chase the substantial things. Chase the dreams that you got you here in the first place.
No, definitely. It's very, very well said there. Thanks for that, Rob. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it tonight. I know people are going to be listening to this, not see it, and I've just disappeared into a world of darkness here as the sun's gone down in Ukraine. We've been on for so long and we're an hour into the evening. It's been a great chat. I've really enjoyed it. People listening to this, if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best place for them to contact you?
Well, I do LinkedIn sporadically, don't feel aggrieved that I don't get back to you straight away because I do it on a sparingly basis. LinkedIn, that's it. I don't do Facebook, don't do Instagram, don't do Twitter,
none of that. That's it for today, everyone. I've certainly enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed listening to it as well at home. So until next time, I'm Adam at UkraFot24. You can follow me on all the social medias that I do. Till next time, everyone, take care and stay safe.